Welcome to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane, and your host is psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson.
And I'm Ryan Dobson. And to begin, I'm going to read a scripture. 1 Corinthians says that when the Lord comes, he'll bring light to what is hidden in the darkness. And if anyone listening today has any secrets that are lurking in your heart or home, I think you'll find today's story very helpful.
And we actually are going to be talking about a pretty heavy topic and getting into some things that will be very difficult to explain to a younger child. So, Mom and Dad, if you have your children nearby right now, we would suggest you would occupy them elsewhere for the next half hour.
And hopefully you'll never have to discuss this
That's
with your
right.
children.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sober program, and we're going to begin now as my dad, Dr. James Dobson, introduces our guests on this Family Talk broadcast.
We're going to talk today with a family that has had a very painful secret that was hidden for 18 years. But today, after prayer and agreement among themselves and a book that was written, they have decided to share that message with us. And they are great friends, people that our listeners will recognize. And the reason that we are doing this today is to hopefully help others who still have a dark secret and are dealing with memories that just won't go away. Our guests, as I said, are very familiar with many of our listeners. The parents are Dr. Walt Lairmore and his wife, Barb. Also with them are their two grown children, Kate and Scott, and we're going to hear from each of them in a moment. Dr. Lairmore is a medical doctor and a former vice president of medical outreach. He also served on the Physicians Resource Council from 1993 to 2004. Dr. Lairmore is now associate medical director for the Mission Medical Clinic here in Colorado Springs. He's an author, a medical journalist, a speaker, an educator, and a friend. Welcome back, Walt.
Good to be here, Jim.
It's always good to have you here. Barb Lairmore became best friends with Walt when they were in kindergarten, because Walt is a very fast worker, it would appear. The relationship grew, but we're going a very different direction today, as I indicated. Let me introduce the daughter and son of Walt and Barb. Kate is our favorite young woman, one of my favorites, because of her courage, her caring personality. She is so easy to love, and because of her love for Jesus Christ, and that shows in what she does. Kate, you have overcome some very difficult challenges in your life with cerebral palsy, which occurred at birth, and tell us how you're doing. Kind of that's a good place to start. Tell us about that experience very briefly.
Well, I'm doing really well. I learned how to tie my shoes when I was interning in Washington, D.C. and
at the White House, as a matter of fact.
At the White House in the president's speech writing office.
Hmm. So things that involve physical dexterity have been difficult for you.
They have.
And yet you graduated from college.
I did.
You went to Samford University.
Yes.
Yeah. This day today is a very meaningful time for you and for us, and I appreciate your being here.
Thanks.
Okay. And also with us is Scott, Kate's younger brother. He's married to Jennifer, along with their little girl named Anna Kate. And in fact, she is named after your sister, isn't she?
She is.
I think that's really neat. Scott also graduated from Samford University. And Scott, glad to have you back.
Thank you.
All right. I went into some detail here to introduce these four folks that have come to be with us today, because our listeners need to know them before we hear about their story. And that brings us to the secret that I mentioned earlier. We need to warn parents that this will not be a good program for youngsters to hear. Barb, we're going to start with you. This is not an easy day for you to be here. Someone told me that when you were first asked to participate in this discussion, your reaction was, I can't do that.
Yeah, I did not want to participate
when initially asked. And then Kate, Scott, and Walt persuaded me that I should because I was part of the story.
Yeah.
It was a hard and difficult time, you know, to know that as a parent, you're a protector of your children.
Yeah.
And then to have them sexually abused right under your nose was a difficult thing to get my mind around.
Well, that is the secret. That's
sure.
what I was speaking of earlier, and that is that both of your children were abused when they were very young. I think, Kate, you were 6, and Scott, you were 3.
Correct.
So at a very, very tender age, this occurred.
Yeah.
What comes to mind as you think about it, and help us understand the story?
You know, I think about their innocence. It was robbed. You know, children don't need to know about those things, especially at such a young age.
Mm. Well, how did it come about? Walt, you jump in here, but I'll let you start the story.
Kate had mentioned to me when I had come home from a meeting something really weird about this particular babysitter. And just her phraseology, you know, I didn't get it.
You mean Kate's?
Kate, what she told me.
It was a male babysitter.
It was a male babysitter. And she came up to me and said something, and I just did not put two and two together. I thought, you know, this is crazy. And I knew that she hadn't been watching TV, but I just didn't put the facts together or string incidents together.
And that's been a source of guilt for you.
Absolutely.
Self-imposed guilt
ever since. I know it's self-imposed, but as their mother, you know, right in my own house.
You missed it.
I missed it. I missed her childish expressions of what she was trying to articulate to me as her mother.
And why would you have been looking for that? In 1985, when this occurred, it was not as common and people were not as focused on it. Unfortunately,
Absolutely.
Today they have to be.
Yes.
But at that time, you were not looking for cues and
clues. I wasn't. Yeah. There was no reason to.
Yeah.
With this particular individual, his parents, you know, the community in which we lived in, you know, you just didn't think about those types of things.
And
especially
as a result,
happening,
it just continued.
That's right.
Walt, what are your recollections of that time?
Well, my memory was when Scott blurted it out. He was the strong-willed child that you described in your book. And despite the fact that the kids had been threatened with harm if they told either Barb or me, Scott was brave enough to tell me that something had happened with this babysitter. And then
at what age? I mean, he was only 3. So when did he tell you about it?
At 3.
He did.
See, I don't think too many incidents occurred before Scott blurted it out. And to me, it was just a typical textbook case when Scott came to me and said, he told us not to say anything or else he wouldn't be our friend and he would hurt us.
Oh, my.
So that got my attention. And just very calmly, I asked him, well, what was that? And Scott told me at that time what the babysitter made them do and what the babysitter had done.
So you did begin to put the pieces together.
Well, I think it was over a short amount of time. I know it was not months, and I know it was not years.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Lord was good in that respect. In that it wasn't prolonged abuse over a long time period.
Walt, your son told you about it enough so that you were suspicious. What'd you do then?
Well, we talked, and he explained what had happened. Kate independently confirmed everything that Scott said. And Jim, you and I have been around kids enough professionally to know that when children that young relate facts that intimate, they're not making it up. Something happened. And so my next step was to confront the young man, and his response was one of anger, denial. It was rage beyond the accusation, and I knew in my heart of hearts at that time, that he was guilty. As a family physician, I was required to report it to the state.
Had to.
I had no choice. But at the same time, we're living in a tiny, tiny little town where everyone knows everyone. And my contact was with the local mental health authorities. I had a patient who worked at mental health and dealt with children's issues. And so he met us at my medical office and interviewed Kate and Scott separately from us. And he became convinced that their story was real. And then they retold the story to the investigators. And it was at that point we realized not only the horror of the stories, but the horror of those stories in their hearts.
Yeah. Did you go to the parents and confront them or tell them?
Yeah. The father actually came and confronted us. He was very angry. They were church-going folks, Sunday school-going folks. He didn't believe for a second that his child ever could or would do such a thing, accused us of lying, accused our kids of making it up. And then Jim threatened to drag our professional reputations through the gutter and to drag our children's reputations through the gutter for years to come. But the threat to our kids, that this was not only going to be exposed publicly, but that they had the potential of being called into witness situations, into aggressive questioning, and from attorneys who weren't going to be friendly with them, was something that just scared us silly.
And yet there was a report of it. As you indicated, as a physician, you had to report it, and a record was taken. And eventually that young man was sent to prison, probably for different charges, but he spent many years in prison.
He did, and we were able to file the complaint in such a way that we could be assured that he would not perpetrate these crimes against other children, that he was going to be watched and that he was going to be tailed so that others couldn't be harmed. And at the same time, our children wouldn't be further harmed.
Yeah, what a dilemma. Scott, you were three. What do you remember about it now?
Honestly, it was always something in the back of my head, something I'd always known had taken place, that it was a picture painted, but one that I never went back to until...
You just stuffed it.
I kind of stuffed it. I was at an age where it wasn't something that would leave a mark on me, if you would.
Yeah.
Fast forward, 20 years later, when Kate tells me the story, it was like watching her paint the picture I had repressed.
And you do recall it.
She started talking, and I just got this chill, and I could close my eyes and see the bedspread on my parents' bed, the color of the floors, the color of the walls, the sounds of the cars going by on the street in front of the hospital by our house. It just, anything... I mean, I was in that room again with that memory no longer repressed.
Isn't that amazing that it stays with you? The trauma of that experience can follow you into adult life and throughout life. And the thing that always amazes me is how the victim is the one that feels dirty, feels guilty,
yes,
feels responsible.
Yes.
Feels somehow cheap.
And back then, the mental health counselors told us not to talk about this. Do not question your children. Do not ask them to repeat what happened. Stuff it.
That's
in other
changed
words,
dramatically in this
stuff
period
it,
of time.
And it has changed dramatically. But, I couldn't get my kids clean enough. I scrubbed them. I just felt the filthiness and the dirtiness.
You actually did. You put them in the tub
and scrubbed
them.
I did. I put them in the tub and scrubbed them, And I know that didn't help. It didn't cleanse anything. Only the Lord Jesus can do that. But it was just something as a mother that I needed to do.
Yeah.
We're so focused on doing. Because my children had been violated. I felt violated. I was so numb. I was so angry. I was so sad that they had to go through this.
Hmm. You know, we're not going to go into the details of what happened, but I've read it, and it's in the book I referred to earlier, your book, Dr. Larimore, Bryson City Secrets, Even More Tales of a Small Town Doctor in the Smoky Mountains. But this was about the doctor himself and not just about the people living in that little community. And so I've seen it, and the things that took place should never, ever happen to a child, obviously. And it must absolutely break your heart to think of these vulnerable kids going through that.
Well, it did. And yet, as Barb indicated, the advice we received after the child mental health professionals evaluated Scott, evaluated Kate, met with them several times, was the kids are doing well. They're doing amazingly well. Leave it be. Don't imprint it. Don't talk about it. Don't refer to it. Mm-hmm. If it comes up, then deal with it. And so that's what we did with the best of advice, but against our intuition,
yeah,
against our
hearts. It was bad advice, unfortunately.
We just did that. Mm-hmm. And so fast forward almost 20 years, and I was working with you, and we received a phone call from Washington, D.C., from Kate Larimore, who was interning at the White House, and it was a phone call that changed our life.
Oh, Kate, tell us about that experience.
Well, I was sitting on my bed after a hard day at work, probably sometime in the middle of October, and the memory of what had happened just came to me. Out of nowhere. And it was probably a week or two before I even had the courage to mention it to Jesus in my journal. And then it was another 3 weeks. And I thought, I'm going to tell my best friend, Caroline, all about this. Yeah. Because if she won't condemn me, no one would.
Were you absolutely certain that you had been abused, or did you wonder if you were imagining it?
I wondered if I was imagining it. You know, a horrible thought just came out of nowhere. And then after I decided I needed to tell Mom and Dad, and Caroline confirmed that that would be good, I didn't want to call them because this is going to change all of our lives. This is going to ruin our lives, maybe even our relationship.
You still felt a little responsible for it then?
I felt very responsible.
Isn't that amazing? You were 6 years old, Kate.
I was.
6 years old. You were in the care of a babysitter. You were told to do what he told you to do. It's irrational, and yet it's typical.
Very typical. I thought I should have stopped it. I should have not done what the babysitter had told us to do. And maybe there was even a little bit of, I should have protected my brother.
We both were raised in the mentality or the leadership of my parents of respect for authority, that authority know they're wise and they know what they're doing. This babysitter was someone in a position of authority of Kate and I.
Yeah.
And so doing as the babysitter said was following directions. It wasn't disobeying.
Yes.
And that's where I think Kate's feelings of the insecurities that she has with the topic.
You all came to record this program some time ago, and you really weren't ready. And Kate, you weren't ready.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. And the Lord led us not to do that. We came up to the point of recording the program and then said, look, let's take the pressure off everybody and let's don't do it. And yet today you feel that this is the thing to do because there are other people out there that, as you said, Scott, need to hear What happened in your case? Because it's out there. It's all over the place. Walt, as a physician, you know how much things have changed in the last 20 years or so. I don't recommend that that people go to the houses of friends for sleepovers now. It's just so common. Why put your kid in that kind of situation? I don't recommend that boys, adolescent boys, babysit for especially girls, but girls or boys, because of all that's going on sexually in those teenagers, all of hormonal things that are raging. Why put them in that kind of situation? You have to question every situation and every person in your mind, don't you?
Without question. And Jim, it's not that we're casting any aspersion on young adolescent boys, but we're recognizing the reality that no matter how moral, how Christian, how close their relationship is to the Lord, that their brains aren't yet developed, that attitudes that they espouse, that they confess, can be overcome in an instant. Yeah. In that hormonal milieu, that undeveloped brain. There's a reason car rental agencies don't rent to boys under 25 years of age. They just know that when they get in those cars, they think and act differently no matter what they say. And placed in babysitting situations, there's a risk. Jim, I hadn't read your books. I hadn't heard your teaching. It was a mistake that we made. But it's one that
was typically done at that time. You know, the other thing is that it's not just teenagers. I mean, you have to think about family members.
Sure.
Our society has gone a little bit crazy, a whole lot crazy. And if people want to know why it's happening, it's largely because of pornography. It's largely because people get involved in pornography, and it's progressive and addictive in nature. And the next thing you know, they're wanting things that are more extreme and more abusive. And it leads to what's called the paraphilias. There are many of them. One of them is child abuse, and child pornography is the producer of those kind of individuals. It's much more complicated than that, but it's something, Walt, you and I have to talk about next time, too, and I want everybody to be there. We're just going to keep on talking because this is not a subject I want to bring you back for, and we will record what we're about to say. But I just want to tell you all how much I appreciate your being willing to open yourself at this point. There are people crying out there right now. There are people saying, yeah, I do remember. Yes, I went through that. And I've carried that as my secret for all these years. And it may have been responsible for some, perversion in their lives as a result of the vulnerability of small kids like this. Any last thing you want to say about it?
These secrets become a cesspool that ferments. And we can shine light on those secrets in such a way that there's hope and health and healing. And that's the story that we wanted to tell. I'm so proud of Kate and Scott for pushing me to even write about this. I didn't want to. But we're convinced as a family that those hidden secrets harm.
And once again, our thanks to the Larimore family for sharing their rather difficult story with us on today's edition of Family Talk. We realize that their journey has been rather difficult to hear about, but as Dr. Dobson just said, we're convinced that there are some of you listening right now who needed to hear what this family talked about today.
Well, Luann, that's why I so admire this family for sharing their painful journey. Mm-hmm. And undoubtedly, this will bring hope and healing to many others listening right now. And if you are interested, you can read more by picking up a copy of the book by Dr. Larimore called Bryson City Secrets when you visit drjamesdobson.org, and there'll be a link to that information.
And if this particular subject matter has brought up something in your past, in your heart, maybe a deep secret that you have simply not allowed yourself to deal with, please give us a call here at Family Talk. We would love to pray with you, perhaps even put you in contact with a counseling referral in your area. And the place to begin is by calling us 877-732-6825.
That's right. You can connect with us online at drjamesdobson.org or the phone number Luann gave, 877-732-6825. Another resource you might check out when you're online, it's When God Doesn't Make Sense. And that's a book where my dad offers assurance of God's constant care, even when human suffering is beyond our comprehension.
As you can tell, everything we do here is our attempt to just put an arm around you, no matter where you may be and what you're dealing with right now. So, as always, thank you for tuning in to this edition of Family Talk. And we do invite you to return tomorrow for the conclusion of this family story. That's next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
We'll see you then.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.